This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Created equal.
When we see the diversity that is required for innovation, then we can encourage it in today's context.
So it's Black History Month, and there are all of these discussions that happen during Black History Month about forgotten parts of Black history. And there, of course, there are lots of them in this country, some forgotten, some purposely hidden. And that's kind of how I came across this study that Andre Perry of the Brookings Institution did about Black inventors and the contributions they made to invention and technology in this country from this really during this really pivotal point in history. 1870 to 1940 is when American life really changes, and there is this boom in inventions and patents and things like that. We've typically thought of that as a white period of invention and growth. He shows how much it was also a Black period of invention.
Well, then tell us who Andre Perry is.
So Andre Perry is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, somebody who studies a lot of issues about race and history, the impact of race on history, all kinds of really interesting subjects. And he came across this, I think, just the way he comes across everything, just kind of digging around.
Just digging around.
Yeah.
When you first started and said, you know, it's Black History Month. I'm like, so you've been thinking about Black History Month during Black History Month, Stephen? No, I can't believe that.
We get 28 days to do it every year.
You're right. And it's almost over already.
Right.
But, you know, when it comes to Black innovation, I think in a popular culture sense, oftentimes we think of more like creative or artistic things. We talk about culture. We talk about music. You know, we've all these artists. But
and now sports, right?
In sports, right. But very seldom do we talk about technology. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side of that, when we think of innovation, we usually don't think of Black people, and we usually don't think of things outside of technology. So I think in this conversation, one, it would be nice to finally focus on Black people who invented and had patents for things in a time that we didn't really know that this actually existed, or at least I didn't know. I wasn't well informed on it. And then on the other side, you know, maybe even asking a bit about innovation beyond just technology.
Right. One of the interesting things in the study is a comparison between invention in the North and invention in the South. And one of the most stunning statistics in the study talks about the fact that there were more patents given to African Americans in the North during this period of invention than there were to whites in the South. And I think that's such a pivotal kind of criticism of the system of racial segregation and oppression that existed in the South. It wasn't just something that affected African Americans. It affected the whole region. And because you didn't have the same kind of barriers in the North, it becomes a much more productive part of the country. You know, that's one of those aha kind of revelations about race and racism that I think is really, really important. We don't think about the effect of discrimination on the discriminators.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm also curious to see in time, if there's more that he wants to look at with this research to see, like, what opportunities were there. Maybe it's not just opportunity, maybe just the lack of the, I guess there was, it's not that there was no racism in the North, but the systems and the regions were different, right?
They were different.
So what about that is what kind of inspired more patents for Blacks and whites in the North?
No, I think they are. I think he and his partners in this study are headed next into the sort of detail of those differences between North and South and Black and white. So sometime soon, we may have to have him back on to talk about that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But for now,
well, let's get to Andre Perry. Andre Perry, welcome to Created Equal.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So I think this is a really interesting subject to talk about in February, which of course is Black History Month, and it is a time when people pay a little more attention to the accomplishments of African Americans, the struggles that we've had, and of course the triumphs that we've had. Here, you're making an argument, I think, that we're thinking wrong when we think about the history of invention in this country, that we aren't giving the credit to ourselves, to African Americans, that we deserve, and that there are some really complicated reasons for that. So where I want to start is with a number out of your research here, that there were 50,000 total patents given to African Americans between 1870 and 1940, and that outpaces immigrants from every other country of immigrants except England and Germany. Okay, so let's start there. Why don't we know this? How come this is not part of the kind of common American narrative?
Yes, my colleagues and I, Jonathan Rothwell and Mike Andrews, wrote a paper in 2020. It was titled "The Black Inventors Who Elevated the United States: Reassessing the Golden Age of Invention." And Mike Andrews and his colleagues actually created a novel database which matched the names of people on patents with census data, so we can get that 50,000 count. And why that we don't hear about that is largely because of how we paint the portrayal of the golden age of invention. Mm-hmm. And that was the essentially the second industrial revolution. It was, you had everything from cars being invented, many agricultural advancements. We started, you know, aerospace innovations. A lot of things occurred between 1870 to 1940. And when you peruse the history books and look at the videos, you see largely white men with mustaches, daintily clothed, and looking smart. And that image obfuscates who actually invented during that period. And a lot of Black people were inventing. In fact, what we found is that in the North part of the United States, in the North, Black people's share of patents equaled their share of the population. Mm-hmm. At that time, Black people accounted for about 1.6% of the population, and 1.6% of patents were actually issued to Black people, which in total amounted to more patents than any other immigrants besides those from England and Germany. Yeah. So, what's incredible about that also is that it's not like that in the North there wasn't discrimination.
Right.
We do cite that the number of patents in the North far outpaced those of Black patents in the North, far outpaced those of Black patents in the South, and they even outpaced white inventors in the South. So it's a phenomenal number, but the history books fail to show the proliferation of Black inventors in the North during that period.
So I want to talk just a little about that period too, and remind people of all of the things that we think of as pretty common today that come about in this stretch of time. I mean, we think of America as a place of invention, and we think of the world we live in as being shaped largely in the late 20th and now early 21st centuries as being shaped by American innovation. And that stretch from 1870 to 1940 is when we see a lot of those things come about. So the telephone, for instance, I think is one of the more acknowledged inventions during that time. But widespread electrification, for instance, also becomes real in that stretch. Mass manufacturing, I mean, talking about things in the city of Detroit, the assembly line that that Henry Ford tries to perfect and that leads to this incredible employment boom that creates the middle class and all of those things. I mean, there is this broad spectrum of things that happen in that stretch. So I wanted to have you talk just a little about that period, but then also what Black Americans were contributing to that we don't get credit for, that we don't hear about.
Well, that period, as you noted, particularly in Detroit, was a phenomenal period because not only did you see the rise of mass production, assembly lines, but in the auto industry in particular. Now, our database does not necessarily dive deep into each sector. Actually, that's the next phase of this research to go into various industries to see where we are specifically contributed. But there's no reason to assume otherwise that we didn't contribute in as many different factors or the different occupations and sectors that saw the boom. So certainly there were Black inventors in the auto industry. Mm-hmm. We just have to uncover them. And that's why it's important for various museums to really invest into uncovering who these inventors are. Because when we see the diversity that is required for innovation, then we can encourage it in today's context. No one is just inventing things in a vacuum. It's a bunch of people working in different social contexts, using their various backgrounds and strengths, and they're bouncing ideas off one another, and they lead to just more inventions. All that diversity and exchange leads to better inventions and innovation. And we need to remind ourselves that we would not have become the world power that we are today. Mm-hmm. Without that diversity. And we certainly did not do that without the inventions of Black people. So it's important not only in the past to say, hey, these are the folks who contributed in the past, but it's a reminder that this is how it's done today, and this is how we're going to advance in the future.
Yeah. Just give us a rundown of some of the things that African-American innovators were doing during this stretch that maybe people don't think about. I mean, there are, of course, African-Americans that do get recognition during that time, people like George Washington Carver, for instance. But who are some of the other folks, and what were they doing that helped shape this period of innovation?
Well, there was the story of Elijah McCoy, the son of an African-American parents who escaped from slavery. He was born in Canada but raised in Michigan. Mm-hmm. Before being sent to study in Scotland at age 15. He was denied work as an engineer because of his race. He had to settle for work as a railroad track technician. In that context, he developed and patented an automated system for wheel lubrication, greatly improving the efficiency of train travel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He went on to have a lengthy career as an inventor. There was Granville Woods, another influential Black inventor in the area, born in Ohio. He made fundamental innovations to railways, especially in the form of communication systems and the distribution of electricity to the rail cars. One more I'll mention is Sarah Boone invented the ironing board, something that we're actually losing skills in over time. But winning the patent in 1892, she was raised in New Haven, Connecticut, by parents who escaped from slavery. So there are a number of stories throughout history that, from ironing boards to railroad communications to lubricants for machines. That's why I said it's such a diversity in the ideas that we're stemming that when given opportunities, people will invent, people will create. Yeah. In the South, where patenting was much lower, I mean, there was still patenting going on in the South, particularly in your agricultural hubs. Black people were inventing things. And agriculture just nowhere near the rate in the North. But that was because the country purposely stifled innovation in the South.
Yeah.
So robbing itself of growth in that regard.
Yeah.
So the story of the that golden age of industry really is also a story of suppression of innovation in the South.
Yeah, yeah. In a little bit, I'm going to want to talk a little more about the influence of racial segregation and, of course, racism on this dynamic between North and South. But before I get to that, I want to talk about the overall difference between the North and the South. You note in the research that even white invention in the South is not as robust as in the North. So this difference among African Americans is also reflected among the general population. I wonder if you can talk just a little about why that was true. What is it about the South that produces less of this than the North?
Yeah, in this report, The Black Inventors Who Elevated the United States, Reassessing the Golden Age of Invention, and those who want to read the report can go to brookings.edu or just type it in, that title into their search engine.
Into Google.
Yep.
Another Google. Great invention, right?
right. And you'll see a chart in that report that shows the patents per capita by region, by race.
Right.
So it shows that in the North, white people in the North had the highest levels of patenting. But then second is black people in the North. And then under that, white people in the South. And then under that, black people in the South.
Yeah.
So like I stated, when you throttle diversity, it's like cutting your nose to spite your face.
Yeah.
We see this in conversations today. Attacks on DEI are really doing ourselves a disservice. We need diversity and inclusion if we want innovation and change.
Yeah.
And so in the South, it was a very oppressive region of the United States that slavery really set a tone for ongoing racism. And then obviously you had Reconstruction, Jim Crow segregation thereafter. And that so during that period, we're still the United States still reeling from slavery and a culture of oppression. So
I mean, it really makes the point that the history of and the dynamics surrounding racism and discrimination in this country don't just hurt African Americans who were the victims of it; they hurt everybody. That you create this kind of culture of of violence, of denial, and lots of other, you know, really difficult things to overcome. And everybody kind of gets caught up in it, and everybody's life is damaged by it. I mean, we say that sometimes, but this is an explicit, I think, empirical proof of that fact.
Yeah, it's in our interest to allow people to flourish. That when you allow everyone to flourish, new ideas are created, new systems are created, new schools of thought. And as a consequence, you're going to get innovation. That's the strength of America. America generally is the place people go to get innovations in technology, in art, in science. And it's because of our diversity. And so when we maximize diversity, we see some of the greatest inventions in the world. When we suppress it, everyone is hurt by it. Our GDP is hurt. You create overall create an oppressive environment. And so, again, it is to cut our nose to spite our face when we don't relish in and advance the diversity that we have.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Andre Perry of the Brookings Institution about Black invention and American invention in the age of invention. Stay where you are. We'll be right back with more Created Equal.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to Created Equal from 101.9 WDET in Detroit. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and thanks for joining. Our guest today is Andre Perry. He's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and was involved in a recent study that took a look at innovation in the United States, this age of innovation from about the 1870s to the 1940s, when American life really changes and influences changes all over the world. The role that African Americans played in that innovation is often overlooked or actively suppressed. In this report, Perry and a few others make it clear that African Americans were key to this age of innovation, and that we ought to be paying more attention to the things, the contributions that African Americans made. Andre, I want to start here talking about the importance of going back now to unearth all of these truths about this era. We live in a very strange era right now, I think, where there is an active debate going on about whether we should talk about the past and how we should talk about the past. Nikki Haley, a former South Carolina governor who's running for president, says out loud that we really ought not talk about things like slavery when we talk about race in the United States today, that those are things of the past. And, you know, ironically, she was governor of South Carolina, the state that started the Civil War. She also says, well, it wasn't really all about slavery. And there are a lot of people who feel that way. Your work stares that in the face and pushes back in another direction. I want to give you some time to talk about why you do that and why it's important for us as a country to be able to have those conversations and to do those things.
Well, for such a long time, America has pretended to be the home of the free and land of the brave and a lot of noble attributes assigned to it, and certainly every country tries to put a good face on itself, But the reality is that when you do that, when you mask the history, you are masking the people who contributed to its greatness. Mm-hmm. There are certainly the stain of slavery cannot be ignored, nor should it. It's we're making history when we deny it. Ambassador Haley made her comments, she was just adding to the negative history instead of really elevating using this moment as an opportunity to share how we are advancing or not as a country. When you are living in a country, in our context, people understand in real terms, what is happening in their lives. You can't say, hey, look, the world is great and unemployment and police shootings and all these things are happening around it. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And so for me, I work in a fact-based organization. We show and reveal facts that hopefully will advance policy so that we can be the democracy that we pretend to be. And so for me, it is imperative to correct the record mm-hmm. where it needs to be corrected. It is imperative for us to show facts so that people can make informed decisions. When you are making decisions off of false narratives, people are bound to be hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm glad you brought up Nikki Haley, Ambassador Haley, mm-hmm. because we also see that history is very political. It is attached to power. People use history to their advantage to make claims to resources. So if you can say, hey, that white people invented everything, then we should invest in white people. That's the implicit statement. Yeah. The reality is that black people, brown people, women are involved in change. And when they are not involved in change, it's because we are suppressing that change. People are people. You know, race is a social construct.
Yeah.
And when we don't see people rising to the highest levels of science, math, engineering, in the arts, and other things, that means there's suppression going on. So for me, one of the reasons why we wrote this report is to show that when given opportunities, people create, people invent, people thrive. When they are suppressed, not only don't we see that innovation, you see a low quality of life overall.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things that also kind of jumps out at me about the research here is the influence of so back to this difference between the North and the South, both in terms of black invention and white invention, the difference in conditions in the North, and as you pointed out, nothing was perfect. I mean, there was still discrimination, but it wasn't like it was in the South. But it also leads to other kinds of innovation and development. I mean, I'm thinking of many of the cultural innovations and changes that happen in this stretch of time from the 1870s to the 1940s as well. The Harlem Renaissance, the invention of jazz, all of these things that profoundly change our lives are things that find their roots in this era, and they find their roots more in the North, where these innovations were easier to come by for blacks and whites than they did in the oppressive South.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about innovation, we kind of limit it to technology,
right?
But let's be clear that many of the social organizations and policy organizations that we're familiar with today emerged during this period as well. The Brookings Institution emerged in this period. Mm-hmm. Around 1920, I believe, not that far away, when the NAACP was emerged, and also the civil rights movement, the early civil rights movement, occurred during this period. So, there were so many innovations. Art, you mentioned the Harlem Renaissance. Mm-hmm. There, so many places, people were reinventing what blackness was. We were reinventing what a civil society looked like. Because one of the things I always say, there's nothing more innovative than care. That we're constantly learning how to care for one another, and that was evolving, but. Certainly, as we moved out of slavery, out of Reconstruction, Jim Crow racism, we were still learning how to care for one another. And we're still trying to innovate in that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So for me, let's not ignore the social and artistic contributions of African Americans during the period, because without that social movement, you wouldn't get a George Washington Carver, we know, for his peanut production, mm-hmm. and Madam C.J. Walker, who worked on hair products. They were also part of a social movement that included innovation as well. So let's keep that in mind.
Yeah. There is also government innovation and change during this time that changes life in the country. Of course, the 1870s is right after the Civil War and the passage of the Civil War amendments to the Constitution. And government is pushed to respond, I think, to some of the innovation that follows this second founding, really, of the United States, that is about more equality, even if it's not absolute equality. And so some of that social change you're talking about is both reflected in and driven by the change in the way that government sees its role.
Yeah, I mean, remember the start of the Constitution, black people are 3/5 of a person.
Right. And slavery is legal.
Slavery is legal. We had to create amendments for people to be recognized as full human beings and citizens, and that had the rights and privileges that were ascribed to white people. And let's not, we always forget women. Women were not afforded basic rights as well. And so government was really changed. It was built around white men. And luckily, gladly, fortunately, I don't know how we should say this, but there was enough room and language imbued in the Constitution where it could evolve to include others. But it did wrap itself around the lived experiences of wealthy white landowners.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the early laws and policies reflected that. But an opening of democracy, an opening of freedom, it was inevitable, in my opinion, that slavery would fall, that Jim Crow racism would fall. Mm. But it's also inevitable that people will want our laws and policies to wrap around a particular population. because that's the way power works. Yeah. People want to hoard and control resources. And so we will always have to fight for diversity, always have to fight for inclusion, because democracy is just not a given.
Yeah.
In any day or context.
Yeah, it requires constant vigilance. If we learn nothing since the founding of this country, it's that. Okay, we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we are going to continue this conversation with Andre Perry of the Brookings Institution. We're going to talk about what this history of innovation tells us about the current era of innovation. All kinds of things are changing, of course, in America right now. Stay where you are. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Welcome back to Created Equal on 101.9 WDET in Detroit. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson. Our guest today is Andre Perry. He's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Andre, I want to spend some time talking about what we can use from this report to help understand what's happening now. We live in an age of incredible innovation. Right now, things are moving very fast and our lives are changing, it seems like, overnight. Black invention does not suffer from the same kinds of discrimination that it did in the past. And there are more African Americans, of course, who are able to excel. But I wonder what you think informs us about now from this research that you did in that previous era, and the things that we ought to have our eyes on still, again, talking about vigilance and democracy, things that still stand in the way of African Americans reaching their potential all the time.
Yeah, in general, I think that what our findings in the Black innovators who elevated the United States, what we found is that when you invest in Black people, at least in their freedom, you're going to see innovation. And likewise, when you don't invest, you're not going to see innovation. You're not going to see creativity, mm-hmm. As much. So for me, in today's context, we need to invest in diversity. We need to invest in elevating new scientists and in populations where we don't see growth and creativity in very standard ways. And so, yeah, we in today's context, we see gaps in who's getting awards for their innovations. We see this in the form of the lack of venture capital going mm-hmm. to African American and brown people. We see it in the who are rewarded the various government contracts for science, particularly around NIH and NSF. There are gaps there. And so we certainly, I would never compare what is going on today to slavery, but we should acknowledge that when we don't invest in Black, brown communities, you're going to not reap the benefits of diversity, and that's innovation. So we have to look at that. Raj Chetty and his colleagues at the Equality of Opportunity Project talks a lot about lost Einsteins, how we're losing Einsteins all the time, that you're much more likely to create a patent when your parents did so. So if we are investing in the development of adults and innovation, we automatically grow our innovators through their children. So it's important for us to make sure that we're investing in all people, because that innovation bears fruit in our children. But it also shows how socially tied we are to one another, that invention should come from all over the place, not just from the children of people who've done it.
Yeah, yeah.
That we should people who don't have that a father or mother with that kind of background, but has a talent emerge. So who gets a patent is very socially constructed. And so we need to really identify talent, even if your parents are not.
Yeah, yeah. I think the useful way to think of it is, you know, talent is universal. Opportunity is what's not, right? There aren't more talented whites or Asians or Latinos or blacks than other groups. It's all about who has the chance to show that talent and exploit it, really. I wonder what you make of the backlash that I think we're experiencing right now to progress, right? Always in American history, progress is accompanied by a pushback. But right now it feels pointed at racial progress in particular. I mean, and it is this fight against DEI, which you referenced earlier, but it's also attacks on things like affirmative action. It's attacks on the very notion that government ought to be concerned with equality, that this idea of colorblindness, neutrality is superior to the idea of affirmatively saying we need to make sure people have opportunity. I go to bed at night right now more worried about that than I did 15 years ago. And that doesn't make sense to me in some ways because, well, we've had a black president, for instance, and we've seen all these other measures of progress. But I fear more, I guess, for my kids because of this pushback, which I think is gaining momentum.
Well, we've been here before, even during the great industrial age, there was intense efforts to deny diversity, deny black people in particular. And so I'm very concerned because it is very pointed at some government programs and initiatives that sort of denies the fact that black people are taxpayers and we should have equal access to government goods just like everyone else. And there's still, but with that said, there's still anti-discrimination laws on the books. And so that's not going away, but attacks on DEI and, book banning and CRT, there's a lot of hyperbole mm-hmm. that really uncovers that there's widespread animosity towards these things in the first place. But yeah. If you're familiar with the American context, you know that was there. We're certainly in a political moment where there are leaders who are certainly encouraging that kind of voice because it can be used to elevate certain political status. But we've been here before, and I remind people of that this. This pushback is a pushback to progress mm-hmm. and that we are changing. We are moving forward and our shared fate is inevitable. If we deny significant portions of the American public the opportunity to grow, we are hurting us all.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I believe that we will, too, again, get through this. It will be painful. And in some cases, it can be fatal.
Yeah.
We know throughout history, people die fighting for diversity. and freedom. So I think this is another very dark period, but it is a recognition that times are changing, people are growing, that we have the talent and technology to recognize not only people in the past, as we did, but to recognize people in the present.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm still, believe it or not, encouraged. But I do fully recognize that we're in a very difficult spot in America,
where
politically deny other people.
Right. I mean, you have an entire movement, a political movement now behind Donald Trump and his former presidency and his candidacy that I think is convened around the idea of making sure that people who are not like his supporters don't get ahead. It's as much about that as it is about his supporters getting what they need. We've got a couple minutes left. I want to give you a chance to talk about that optimism, though, that you just referred to, and what gives you that optimism. What do you see in terms of especially innovation and maybe even specifically in terms of technology innovation that gives you hope today that not only are African Americans getting more chance to participate, but that they're going to be able to be recognized in much better ways than before?
I mean, and I'm encouraged every time I look at various products that are out there. There are Black people's fingerprints on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the COVID vaccines was developed by a young African-American woman, mm-hmm. scientist who was trained at University of Maryland, Baltimore County, which at the time was led by the Black president, Freeman Hrabowski, who specifically made efforts to increase the share of Black PhDs in the sciences. And that bore fruit, that effort, the Meyerhoff Scholarship Program.
Mm-hmm.
Those not familiar should look it up. But that scholarship program in itself produces a number of PhDs in the sciences that go on to do wonderful things in science and in medicine. And I look at my own data that looks at life expectancy rates. Now, certainly it's lower than whites, but when you look at in various regions, you see life expectancy exceeding national averages all over the place. So what we almost always do is compare Black people to white people in the aggregate. And that's just, it's bad in a lot of ways because we really don't see regional changes. We don't see subgroup changes. And in some ways, it's an apples-to-apples comparison. You know, there's a different history between Black people.
And it accepts the social construct of race, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when you look at things regionally or within subgroups, you see change. And you also see how much further we have to go. And so for me, it is about seeing the diversity that we have, the strengths that we have, the challenges that we have, and move forward.
Yeah.
And so I'm always hopeful because, you know, once you become so pessimistic and cynical, you might as well just roll up and die. You,
right.
I mean, you forget there's a reason for why we do this. And I will say this, that we're not entitled to anything, that we have got to keep pushing on. We certainly have rights and privileges, but I'm under no illusion that mobilization, organizing, policy change is required in order for us to become a more perfect union. And that's just going to have to be done.
Yeah.
That kind of that work is just going to have to be done.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Andre Perry, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. It was really great to have you here for this conversation on Created Equal. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, and go Detroit.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. That'll do it for this episode of Created Equal. You can listen to recent episodes online at WDET.org and make sure you subscribe to our podcast. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and David Lines. Additional production support comes from Jack Philbrant. Audio editing is by Connor Anderson, and the music is by Sam Bobian. Our program director is Adam Fox. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.